Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat down in my soul.
Can you see the heat there in control?
I see the heat there in control.
Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Can you see it?
I see it. It's Miami Heat. We can be beat. It's Miami Heat. It's Miami. We can be beat. It's Miami.
Welcome to the Triple H Podcast, episode number 17, right here at HaHaHoops.com. I'm your host, Ernest EJ Christian, alongside, of course, David Ramil. David, what's going on, man?
Not much. Looking forward to talking Miami Heat basketball. It's been a good offseason so far, and hopefully it'll just continue to get better.
As you notice, my voice got a little manlier. No, I'm just kidding. Haley's not here today. Haley's not here today. She said she allowed us to step in her place to host this podcast today. So once again, wish her well, and we'll have her on the next show or the next couple of shows going forward. It's so weird that this week, being in a position that we haven't really been in much in the last 20 years under the Lally era. Like certainly when in the early days, the lottery was pretty much the Heat's home. But since 95, the Miami Heat only been in the lottery 3 times.
It's interesting. I mean, it's something that's, I think a lot of Heat fans have devalued over the past.
Yeah.
It's just with Riley in there, he's never put a lot of stock in rookies playing anyway. I mean, with the exception of Dwayne Wade, and even his freshman year, if you remember it, he was being kind of moved around between point guard and shooting guard.
Right.
Nobody quite knew what to do with him. And as good a season as that was, I think it just evidences that Miami's never put a lot of value in draft picks.
No, never. At least definitely in Miami in the last decade or so. But they did get that top 10 pick secured. That would have gone to Philadelphia had the Heat had the Heat ended up between 11 and 14 in the draft order this past Tuesday at the draft lottery. That pick would have gone to Philadelphia. Of course, that pick is the remnants of the LeBron James acquisition in 2010. Which still, I mean, look, I know it's kind of like it looks bad now, but look, it's well worth the picks. It was still well worth it in the last 4 years. Still well worth it.
Absolutely.
So.
Alonzo Mourning did his job, though. He went there, represented Miami in the draft lottery, and he wound up pulling out the 10th pick, so that's all we could hope for.
Thumbs up, but let's not get too used to this lottery thing. I'm not used to it anymore.
Yeah.
That makes a thing where we're cheering for the lottery pick, and I mean, it was such a weird position to be in on Tuesday. I'm watching the TV. I'm like, okay, hold on a second. I'm actually cheering in a draft lottery. I mean, you can argue 2008 was a freak year because Dwayne Wade got hurt early in the season,
right.
And I mean that. So there's really been legitimately only 2 years, really 1 year if you think about it, because it was 2003 before we got Wade. Because last year was a catastrophe of injuries also too. So to be honest with you, if you throw away if you use context and all this, honestly, and I mentioned going to the segment that if you only had 3 years of. 3 years of when the Heat were in the lottery, and 2 of those years were catastrophe years. Pat Riley and company have only been a legitimate lottery team, in my opinion, for 1 season in 20 years. That's phenomenal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, clearly they've achieved playoff success, 19, I think, playoff appearances in 21 seasons, something, or 22 seasons at this point. I mean, they missed it last year, so that was clearly an aberration. But overall, I think that's part of the reason why the draft has never been a big plus for Heat fans. I think it's just something that you're never looking to avoid. You're looking to avoid building through the draft. I think Miami has had this culture since Riley came over. You never look at it that way, but right along with you, I was there watching the draft lottery, did a little fist pump when we got the 10th pick, so I was excited to see that. That was a little conflicting, right? I mean, it was a little weird to see.
It was a weird moment for me. It was definitely a weird moment for me. I'm very uncomfortable, but I'm happy about it. We move on now, and now it's time to do some homework, because now we're in a position now to do some homework, because the question everybody asks us writers and people is, who fits the mold? What guys do the Heat have that are available that they can get? What quality? And I can tell you this much. And look, college basketball in recent years has been more of a backdrop for me now. because, you know, there's so much going on and you get older. And to be honest with you, the game hasn't been great, if we're being really honest with you. But all the experts say that this is a deep draft. All the experts say that this, while they may not be some, like, heavy hitters in terms of, like, Hall of Famers that come off your page, there are a lot of guys in this draft that are going to, you know, are going to be impact players on rotations immediately. So I guess the first thing we should be asking ourselves is, which guys do you see that you may know of, David, that could be falling to Miami at 10 and that can actually impact this franchise moving forward?
I think there was a good piece on Hot Hot Hoops about it, but I think all the mock drafts that have come out to this point are looking at a pretty good core of guys that Miami is looking at. I think if you're looking at the wing position, you're talking about guys like Kelly Oubre out of Kansas.
Right.
Stanley Johnson out of Arizona. I think you might see guys like Sam Decker out of Wisconsin.
I call him the White Durant. The White Durant. Go ahead.
Devin Booker out of Kentucky. And then if you go front court, maybe you might try to bring in a guy like Frank Kaminsky, who was obviously part of Wisconsin's championship title team. I mean, well, they at least trying to get a title team anyway. But, I think you might see somebody who, like Kaminsky, who's at 7 feet, you know, capable of hitting that outside shot and might be a versatile big in the NBA. So that's one name that's been bandied about out there.
It sounds like that based on what you're saying, it sounds like that the priority should be getting a wing player, basically getting guy at the two or the three to complement Dwayne Wade and Luol Deng, if Luol Deng chooses to stay here, which obviously we'll get to in a second. That seems to be the priority going forward, right, Dave?
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head as far as Deng is concerned. He's clearly going to dictate how Miami moves forward, but we probably won't know his status until after the draft. But either way, when you look at the platoon of guys that Miami shipped through last season at the wing position, you know, guys like Tyler Johnson, Henry Walker, et cetera, even Michael Beasley to an extent there, you're looking at guys that never really took it to the next level. And if you're going to continue that theme that we talked about so many times during last season about player development, bringing young guys and finally getting them to maybe achieve that kind of next level at the NBA, I think you're looking to build somebody in the draft, and I think the wing position is probably where they're going. And I think they've mentioned that. I think they're keeping their plans, you know, as Riley's ought to do. He's probably keeping his plans a little bit secretive, but at the same time, what he's revealed so far is that they're looking for perimeter scoring and a complementary, versatile wing player, somebody who can come in there off the bench, I guess, assuming that Wade is going to be healthy, assuming that Deng is going to be back in the rotation.
I think they go in the direction regardless if Deng comes back because, you know, you're getting, once again, these are rookies, so these are guys you can develop anyway. So if Deng is going to resign or opt in for another year, I mean, it's only going to be one more year anyway. So, God knows after beyond next year if he'll even commit to being here in for another 2-3 years after that, which I doubt, but whatever. So I think that's the direction he's still going. I think he's still going the direction of getting a wing player regardless of what Luol Deng does. I did some research a little bit on this. Stanley Johnson, I've seen a couple times throughout the year. He's a pretty good player. A lot of the mocks, and look, you guys, if you listen to my podcast on the outside, by the way, Ernest Speaking Podcast on iTunes, a little plug there. This is my podcast. You know I hate mock drafts. And I'm talking about not just the NBA, but especially the NFL. I hate mock drafts. But all the mocks that I've read, this, you know, not so much reading, you know, into it, just looking to see what number 10 looks like. Well, what does everybody say about number 10? Who's going to fall number 10? And most of the mocks I read has the Heat selecting Stanley Johnson down in Arizona. And to me, that's a guy I think that can have an impact on his team immediately.
I mean, he's got an NBA-ready body, is what they're saying. You know, one of the startling things that they've mentioned in the past is that he hasn't really been a workout guy. You know, despite the fact that he's got a chiseled, I think, 240-50-pound frame, he hasn't really been working out much until he came to Arizona. You know, obviously he left after his freshman year, but he's a very muscular guy, very athletic, et cetera. He's got the kind of length that they're looking for as wing defenders are concerned. And he certainly fits that mold. I think the issue with him, from what I've seen, is that he has a problem finishing at the rim. And now I looked into that a little bit more, and basically what happened was that he kind of took over that scoring load in his freshman year at Arizona, and he tried incorporating a floater into his offensive repertoire. Obviously, that's going to weaken you know, your overall field goal percentage and your ability to finish at the rim. So I think that was one of those things. Maybe he could have taken it a little bit more aggressively, finished off with a dunk or a much more high percentage layup or something along those lines. But clearly, yeah, he does fit that mold. So, you know, his stock is actually rising a little bit. I've seen him going as early as 7 in some mock drafts. Uh-huh. It's impossible to tell what's going to happen. But you're right. He has been linked to Miami quite a bit. Riley met with him, talked about his athleticism and his versatility as a wing player. So clearly he's on Miami's radar, and that's a good thing.
He's a very young player, too, 18 years old still. Yeah. He starts 19 actually next week, but okay, whatever. It's a big deal. By the way, he has a little Mario Chalmers in him, because I'm reading a little thing here, a little quote here that came out a couple hours ago that he calls himself the quote-unquote the best player in the draft. So definitely a little Mario Chalmers swag coming out of Stanley Johnson's mouth. But you know what? Okay. Well, I'm okay with another Rio.
I mean, it's kind of, you're walking a fine line. And I think, you know, as fans, everybody wants these guys to be extremely humble and all this. But, you know, the reality is you can't get to that level without having some kind of confidence, if not complete outright arrogance. So you know what, if he's just going to say this, I've actually heard him in interviews, incredibly well-spoken. I mean, okay, the kind of intelligent player that Miami really puts a premium on, this is a guy who could probably fit in very well, especially if Deng leaves. But if not, he could really come in there, learn a lot from Wade as far as, you know, applying your skills in a veteran kind of mentality, playing the old man game that Wade has dominated in as far as the past couple of seasons. Or if, you know, he comes in there, learns how to stay with his opponent, you know, on defense from Deng. This is a guy who could be a big part of Miami's future moving forward. So that's a great thing. You know, I like what I see of him. You know, maybe there's some issues as far as psychologically, you know, I've heard some reports that maybe he might have a bad attitude or something along those lines. But from what I could tell, his coaches and his teammates all seem to appreciate him. And been a big part of what they their success last year.
It's funny. I start reading what's that whole bad attitude thing. Look, every kid that comes to play basketball in a major college basketball market is going to come with a little bit of ego. Okay. I think that's
sure.
I think we use, not saying you necessarily, but I think a lot of people in the media use that whole narrative too much. I think they use that to fill in news, I guess, because it's time between now and the draft. So I mean, I think they use that just to have something to talk about.
I mean, it's that whole thing that we were just talking about. I mean, you see a player, you're targeting, you want this guy, this, you know, picture of an All-American kid, you know, real clean cut, etc. I mean, you know, people are people. They're going to change. They're going to do things. I mean, maybe they come across as being a little cocky or whatnot. But, you know, I think overall, when you look at what they can do on the court, first and foremost, and you know what? No better example of that than Miami's Hassan Whiteside. You know,
yeah,
he had a bad attitude coming out of college, and now look at him. He's thriving. Could possibly reach an all-star level at some point.
Absolutely. There's always the opportunity teams that want to move around the draft. And you know, you heard reports about the New York Knicks, got number 4, by the way. The Knicks, oh my God, they can't catch a break, can they? The New York Knicks, I swear. a lot of teams have the opportunity, actually, you know, they may want to move that pick. Let me ask you, I mean, grading the fact that there's going to be a lot of guys who may come to, not just Stanley Johnson, but a lot of guys that who may fit this team moving forward, are you convinced the Heat should trade this pick? Or should I stay with
it? You know, that's an interesting question. I think you look at the salary cap situation moving forward, and clearly Miami's going to be struggling. I've heard some reports that Wade might opt out, and that probably would create a little bit more financial flexibility. I'm not sure how much that's a reality or not. I don't think he's confirmed anything one way or the other publicly. So clearly you're going to have a lot of money committed to at least Chris Bosch. You're looking to have a lot of money committed to Goran Dragic as well. You know, you've got the looming contracts of, you know, Wade and Deng should they opt in. And then, of course, in the future, you've got Hassan Whiteside you have to consider. I mean, he'll be an unrestricted free agent at the end of this season. So you're going to have a good core in place if you're able to, you know, financially secure all of them. But that's the ticket, isn't it? I mean, it's the issue. You're not quite sure whether or not you're going to be able to do so. So if maybe trading the pick creates a little bit more financial flexibility, I think you kind of have to do it. But at the same time, you know, you're looking to build, develop players at a young age. You know, again, it's a very conflicting situation for Miami there. If you're asking me whether or not I think they should trade the pick, I don't think they should. I think they should look to build a, you know, grab a player this year. Again, hopefully all the players re-sign, everybody opts in, et cetera, and you can bring in a player who's going to learn and be, you know, able to contribute off the bench, if not occasionally as a starter. And I think you have a legitimate chance of making a championship run this year. You know, if everybody comes back healthy, if Dragic plays at the level he can, you know, if McRoberts contributes as a key bench player, I mean, you've got a unique skill set. You've got a lot of versatility on this roster. We're looking at this playoff run from, you know, teams in the East and Western Conference. I don't know that anybody necessarily stands out. Golden State clearly has you know, they've been heads and shoulders above everybody else, but even they have had some weak moments. I couldn't necessarily say that if Miami was at full strength next year and if they got a rookie player, maybe a veteran who comes in for a mid-level exception or something along those lines and contributes, I could see Miami advancing to the finals next year and giving Golden State or another team in the West a run for their money, too. I mean, they might be weakened if Draymond Green leaves there as well. So, I mean, you've got a lot of issues in place here. But as far as Miami's title chances, I think they're pretty good next year, and I think you're all in as far as next season is concerned.
I think I told you on the podcast we did together a couple weeks ago, you and I, on my show, that it was a priority for Golden State to lock a Green. And if they lock a Green, they're set for the next 4 or 5 years.
Sure.
You know, so, but I'm gonna throw you a hypothetical.
All right.
I'm gonna get all gas baggy with you now because this is something that's been thrown around a little bit in the last couple of weeks in terms of the Heat and staying on the topic of trading up. Should they actually get? And this is a hypothetical. There's no rumors. Don't get started and saying, "Oh, EJ's trying to, you know, stir the pot." No. This is just hypothetical. If the Heat were to actually crack the top three for some reason, crack the top three. You know, and they get a chance to, you know, draft those centers, whether it be Okafor or Anthony Towns, whatnot. Do you really consider trading Hassan Whiteside? Given that Hassan Whiteside also, you know, he's in for more year, but he's due big bucks next summer. And remember, rookie wage scale. You sign these young kids. You got them on a pretty much a manageable contract for a good 3-4 years, versus Whiteside, who might get big dollars. Plus, right. the centers coming in here are a lot younger than Whiteside too. So, yeah. do you risk losing the guy that is pretty much a fringe all star in Whiteside? And that hypothetical, what would you do if you're Pat Riley if you actually got the opportunity to crack that top three, maybe even the two, which I doubt was not going to happen. I'm just saying hypothetically speaking, would you actually do that, make that transaction?
I think. It's again back to that same issue whether or not you want to consider next season as being an all-in season where you have to have your best players available. I don't know that necessarily either Towns or Okafor are going to be able to contribute as high a level as Whiteside will next season. So that's the situation there. Now, if you're looking long-term future, and I don't know if you necessarily want to put Dwayne Wade in a position like that where you're going to necessarily mortgage the future, you know, considering he's only got a few years left at such a high level. So I think you probably don't make that trade. Having said that, I personally would. I think you're looking long term. I don't see Whiteside coming back, and I've maintained that from the beginning. I think he's going to go and chase those dollars somewhere else because I think that's just the nature of the beast in the NBA. I think when you have an opportunity to cash in, you prove yourself at a high level as he has this past season, as he will probably next season, and you can all of a sudden take your incredible, you know, historically good rim protection, shop it around, look at DeAndre Jordan. He's certainly going to cash in this year. I think a guy like Whiteside is probably going to wind up leaving Miami, given the situation as far as their salary cap and their commitment to Chris Bosh, their commitments to Goran Dragic, et cetera. So I don't see Whiteside staying with Miami for beyond next season. So if you're asking me what I'd do as GM, it would probably be to trade Whiteside in the 10th pick in the hope that I can get Okafor, who I think is a better, I guess, long-term Okafor is a better immediate impact. But I think Towns is what they're projecting as the better overall player as far as his versatility is concerned.
I think Heat Nation's stomach dropped when you said that, but Whiteside probably not be you predicting that Whiteside won't be here next season. I think a lot of people, Heat fans, hearing this podcast, or will hear this podcast, said, "What, Dave, are you serious right now?"
I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, at the same time, I just don't see it, you know?
They do hold his bird rights, though, right? They can offer him the fifth year, right? Sure. Beat. So that's the one advantage he do have, is that if they want to actually, you know, if they are convinced that Whiteside is their future, the one advantage they do have is that fifth year.
I mean, you know, next year it's going to be interesting because you look at some of the comments that, you know, Riley made during his end of season presser. You look at what Whiteside needs to develop. He's clearly got some room for growth. I mean, his passing is obviously his biggest weakness there. So he's still going to be kind of, you know, shopping himself as far as next season's concerned. He has a lot to prove still, despite what he did this past year, the ability to finish at the rim, his rim protection, etc. I mean, clearly he has a skill set there, but he needs to develop that even more. So if you look at what he's capable of doing right now, he's not a max contract kind of guy, but he could be, and he probably feels that he is. And I think, you know, given his attitude in general, given the fact that guys in the NBA always have an inflated sense of who they are, I could very easily see him saying, you know what, I want to move on to greener pastures, and as far as greener, I mean more money. So, you know, it's interesting. But we'll see what happens. I mean, next year, again, you know, he's got to fit in. He's got to mesh with the guys coming back. You got Chris Bosh coming back.
Not to the Heat horn and be the Heat homer here, but like the Heat have two advantages there with Whiteside. It's sure. fifth year and the no state tax, which is a big deal because I think when you start crunching actual numbers, you can go to another team, and Miami can actually make a comparable deal to where it's lower on their end, in the 5 years, it's cap friendly in other words on their end, than a team that say LA or New York. Let's throw names out there who are heavy tax states, and yeah, it looks good on the front end, but you get hit with major taxes. So Miami does have that advantage that the state tax and the fifth year, I think, gives Miami at least bargaining wise an advantage on there.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, I'm just thinking about it now, even as I mentioned it. You know, you've got a lot of guys next year. You got, let's say, you know, Dragic, he's not necessarily going to be looking to score all the time, but you know he's going to have to justify that big money. Chris Bosh is coming back. Clearly, he's a guy who can score. Deng is going to be auditioning as well if he opts in,
right?
Because you know he's going to be hopefully. Well, you'll
have that money available because like, even if he opts in this year, I mean he's a free agent after this year anyway. So he'll have that. You'll have $10 million right there of Deng's money tied up, loose and ready to go.
Sure.
So that's something you have an advantage on.
Right.
Still got trade assets. I mean, you still have, you know, obviously you can. I'm not saying they should do this, but even the opportunity to trade Josh Roberts is still on the table.
Absolutely.
You know, so there is some. If Miami is convinced that Whiteside is their guy moving forward, and they want to keep him beyond five, you know, beyond the next season, there's some assets here to be moved. So I mean, I'm not as worried about it. Really, necessarily. I think the big thing right now the Heat fans look at is make sure Whiteside continues to develop in a positive way because it's all fine and dandy to be 20-20 on some nights, but let's hope those 20-20s translate to wins. A lot of those games he did, those 20-20s, were in losses.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, he did step up in big moments. So I remember the Clippers game on the West Coast road trip, Chicago, where he had the triple-double.
Those were, yes. 2K rating.
So, you know, what do you think? You know, you didn't answer the same question. Do you think Miami keeps the pick, or do you think they wind up making a trade?
They got to keep the pick. Why would you put yourself in a position to, you're not going to get the two guys because those two guys are going to Minnesota and LA. That's not happening. Those two teams are not budging from their position. Okay.
You don't think LA would welcome an opportunity to build?
I think LA for the first time is going to be very smart and build the right way.
It's interesting because, you know, I could see them if you package, let's say, you know, Hassan Whiteside, Josh McRoberts, and the 10th pick, send them to LA for the second pick.
What assets though are there for LA? LA wants free agents. If anything, they want free agents. So unless they're going to dangle that draft pick, you know, to somebody else. Yeah. And I don't know why they would do that if all the guys they might want to get are going to be on the market next year or two. Love, possibly. Sure. Westbrook in 2 years, even Kevin Durant next year. You know, so I mean, why would you, you know, trade those assets unless you truly? LA, I've been saying all along that the Lakers need to slow build. They need to be patient. There's no Shaq. There's no Shaq and Kobe to bail them out this time.
Yeah, that's not necessarily been their MO for the past 30 years, though. I don't think patience is their strong suit.
Now they're in a position where they're not good. okay? And there's no Shaq and Kobe's out there for you to get. You know, LeBron's locked up in Cleveland. He's not going anywhere. Carmelo didn't come out there. I mean, Kevin Love is the only guy I would say that they may have an advantage of getting. You hear reports of them throwing money in Jimmy Butler. I mean, no offense to Jimmy Butler. I love the guy, but he's not a math guy.
No.
Not in my opinion, anyway.
No, and especially not with Kobe there.
Exactly. Wait till Kobe leaves, then make your moves. One more year of Kobe. Yeah. Anyway, you and I did an article a couple weeks ago. Actually, it was this week, I think. Luol Deng, and we just started debating, you and I, about Luol Deng's future and whether he should opt in or not, but whether how fans and their perspective of Luol Deng, should we be happy with him opting in or opting out whenever he makes a decision? How do you feel right now about Luol Deng's prospects? First, let me ask you, do you think he'll opt in next year? Or this year? This summer, should I say?
You know, if you had asked me, you know, a few months ago, I would have said that he was clearly going to come back. I think that he's, you know, he's always enjoyed his time here. He said nothing but great things about the organization. But there just seems to be too much buzz going on about him opting out and trying to secure more money as he nears the end of his career. So yeah. I think if you're asking me, I think he's gone. I think he opts out. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that he couldn't try and negotiate, you know, a multi-year deal with Miami. It just seems like that's something that they're not willing to do.
I'm kind of like, you know, I'm kind of with you there. Like, I would have said, yeah, opt in. But if I'm in Luol Deng's shoes, I'm doing the same thing also, too. I'd opt out. Because if I know that I have very low tread on my tires left, and I have one more guaranteed year to opt in at $10 million, but I can probably get on the open market for 3 years, $22 million. Granted, yes, it's less money per year, but you get more security for two or 3 years, whatever he gets going forward.
Sure.
And I'll be honest with you, I want him back here next year. I think he deserves a do-over, but I don't think I'll be that mad about it if he leaves.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a tough situation for the Heat fans, and I think for Deng, you mentioned in the article that we did that he hasn't necessarily been utilized properly, but then again, there are the things that he did very well here, namely shooting corner threes. And then at the end of the season, he kind of not necessarily complained, but grumbled a little bit about the role that he didn't see himself as a standstill shooter in the corners. But that's where he actually thrived. That's where he did his most, you know, that's where he was most productive. And my issue, and I wrote about this, is that he was just too inconsistent over the course of last year. And I think that we saw a lot of good games, but then we saw a lot of really atrocious games where he was not a factor, and that played a part in the number of losses that Miami accrued over the course of the season. I know that the injuries are going to take their toll anyway. I know it's always more difficult for the players left on the floor, given that you don't know who's going to be playing with you on a given night. But, and to his credit, Deng played 72 games, more than he had in a number of years. He was the second most active player for Miami other than Mario Chalmers. So he was, you know, injuries were not a factor. So you have to give credit to where credit is due. But while he's on the floor, even though you don't know who's going to be on the floor, whether you still have to be a little bit more productive. And there were just too many 4 of 13 nights, 2 of 7 nights, where he was just accruing 4 points, 5 points, 6 points, somewhere in that vicinity. That's not going to cut it for a guy making $10 million. So, it's a little disingenuous for me to write what I did because, as you and I have talked about a number of times, and when he first joined Miami, you got to love Deng the person, right? I mean, he's always been a high-character guy. He's a defensive stalwart. He fits into the mold that Miami has created very, very well. But at the same time, he's not giving me much to work with, man. I'm trying to root for the guy, but I'm not sure that I can, given those inconsistencies over the course of last season.
Right. The reason why I'm not too worried about it, though, also, is that even if he opted in, it's only one more year. Okay, so it's 1 year. His last good year. So he'll be motivated to play well next year because if he did opt in, he's betting on himself to get another contract next season. Probably somewhere else. Probably maybe here still. Depends on how it works out. So it does benefit. I think Miami wins either way. Because if he opts out and Miami says, okay, well, we're not going to resign you.
Sure.
Okay. There's $10 million available now to play with. And it gives the Heat an early advantage in figuring out, okay, if Whiteside is our guy moving forward, that money can be allocated to Whiteside. That can allocate to somebody else, even Dragic. I think the Heat wins on both ends here, no matter what, because Miami's big challenge is not going to be this summer. It's going to be next summer in terms of the salaries. And I don't think Pat Riley wants to take on more long-term salaries beyond Dragic this summer. Obviously, Dragic is worth it because Dragic is a top 5-6 point guard in the league. But beyond that, I don't think he wants to take on any more salaries. Unless Dwayne Wade's restructuring again, which is fine.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting situation, right? I mean, I don't think anybody had ever considered that he was going to be opting up. But then you hear from the Miami Herald that he might be considering it. I wonder, you know, what's his end game? And he's already talked about, I think, that he and his wife have already looked at, you know, when his career is going to end, that they've already got a number in mind that, you know, he's not going to try and stretch it out. And he seems like a kind of guy who's not, he's accomplished enough as he has, and as much as he loves the competition and everything else, I can see him fitting into retirement very easily, you know what I'm saying? So
I don't think he'd be like Kobe and everybody else who's going to have a hard time letting it go.
Right. I mean, he's got so many interests outside. He's got his kids. He's got his wife. He likes traveling. He likes his fashion stuff. I mean, this is a guy who's going to be quite comfortable once he retires. So I don't see him necessarily, you know, struggling with the decision. But I wonder when that end is, and, you know, as far as, you know, he's got a clear idea of when it might be. But is it this year, after this year? Is it next year? And clearly, you know, if he's going to opt out, maybe he re-signs with Miami for a lower amount for 2 years, let's say.
Yeah.
And then that'll be, you know, the last two years of his career.
And it helps Miami, too, in the process.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, like I said, that could be a good thing for Miami if he opts out, because it actually lowers the per-year salary, especially next year with the cap expected to go skyrocket to, I'm hearing numbers of $96 million, so like even past $100 million, you know. So.
Yeah.
And Miami, once again, no state tax, has a major advantage on that. So that'd be interesting to see what happens with Deng, how that goes out. Another hypothetical, quickly. I mean, we don't need to spend too much time on this one, but you know, all signs point to Goran Dragic resigning in Miami, getting his 5 years when he wants. Are you concerned that he might have second thoughts once he has hit the market in July?
Yeah, that's interesting. You'd think, you know, free agency, we've been burned, especially last year, as far as thinking that we have a clear idea, and then all of a sudden going a completely
LeBron,
different.
That guy?
Yeah, that guy, yeah, I remember. But at the same time, I mean, I'm hearing such overwhelmingly positive things from Dragic, from the Heat themselves. It's almost like they think it's a done deal, like a foregone conclusion, which is very rare when it comes to negotiations and stuff like that. I think they're talking about, at the end of the day, maybe a few million here and there, you know, astronomical numbers to us, but to players, maybe not necessarily such a big deal. So you tend to think that he's coming back in Miami, and it's almost, again, a foregone conclusion, but maybe that's not the case. I don't know. I think he'll come back. I'm not necessarily worried about it at this point. Now, if I hear that all of a sudden the two parties are at a stalemate and nobody's willing to acquiesce, no one's going to give any ground up, then I'll start to get worried, because we don't have a backup plan for that. I mean, literally and figuratively, there's nobody who can come in and play the starting position as a point guard unless we somehow fall into a great point guard option at the 10th pick, which I don't think there are many available.
Once again, the advantage that he'd have here with him, too, is –
yeah,
tax and right. Fifth year,
right? And I mean, he's talked about wanting to play with Wade. He developed a real good chemistry there. I mean, the pick and pop, pick and roll situation with Chris Bosh is going to be something that, you know, we didn't get a chance to see, but man, that's going to be awesome. I'm excited about the possibilities. You know, both Bosh and Dragic have mentioned it publicly. It would be the second most alarming thing to happen via free agency since, you know, LeBron, obviously. So I can't expect Dragic.
I think LeBron's the outlier, because people say, oh, well, he went to Cleveland for money. No, it's not about money for him going to Cleveland. LeBron's going to get money where he goes. It was about him wanting to go home and him wanting to build something new in Cleveland. I mean, that's about LeBron James is the outlier in this situation. Like, Goran Dragic, no disrespect to Goran Dragic, but he doesn't carry the same clout that LeBron James carries.
No one does.
So it's a different situation. It shouldn't even be compared to.
Can I propose one more thing here?
Sure.
Watching the playoffs, and I'm sure we'll talk about that soon, but how do you feel as a fan rooting for LeBron James? Like, when you watch him playing, you watch him excelling as he has in the playoffs, How do you feel? Are you feel conflicted?
What makes you think I'm rooting for LeBron James when I'm in the playoffs?
No, not necessarily rooting for him. When you're watching the playoffs, and I mean, I think everybody, you know, when they're watching basketball and you see an incredible individual performance like LeBron has been capable of, you know, over in Cleveland during the playoffs, I feel like you can't help yourself but go, wow, unbelievable, you know, things along those lines.
Well, first off, as I told you before, I was a huge LeBron fan even before he came to Miami.
Right, right.
He was really my favorite player to leave before he came to Miami. It didn't really matter. Am I still bitter about him leaving? Yes, I am. But that doesn't change the actual narrative, the tangible narrative, which is the fact that he's still the best player in the world. He's going to be a top five guy when it's all said and done. He's going to be in that rarefied era with Michael and Magic and those guys. That doesn't change. I mean, just because he moved locations and you feel differently about him because of your favorite team being spurned doesn't change the actual tangible, result. He's still an all-time great, period. That doesn't change. As I said before, in the past, I think my bitterness towards LeBron does have an expiration date. I don't think it's going to go on for 3, 4, 5 years. I'm actually rooting for Atlanta because I want to see Atlanta do well. You know what I'm saying? So,
yeah.
I guess that kind of helps there. But, yeah, like last night in game one against Atlanta, I mean, he was incredible. By the way, I want to shout out a guy on Twitter because we have a discussion on Twitter about, the series, the Hawks series. Shout out at Kane Tony. That's one of, he's actually a Heat life and also himself. I tweeted this morning, and follow me here, Dave. Follow me because I'm. Is it gonna sound crazy at first when I say it, but when I explain why, it'll make sense. I tweeted this morning that I said that in this series, pretty much in this team, that J.R. Smith actually scares me more than LeBron James.
Okay.
And of course, I get tweets saying, "Are you nuts? Are you nuts? It's LeBron." No. Hear me out. LeBron's going to get his. He can score 40 in the series, average 40 in the series, and still lose because he's done it before. Remember the conference finals against Orlando in 09? Can't forget, he averaged a triple-double in that series, and he still lost in 6 games. LeBron's going to get his. J.R. Smith is so streaky, and streaky shooters always scare me. When they are on, they can literally tilt a series. Remember Shane Battier in 2012?
Sure.
I mean, LeBron gets his in that series, Dwayne, of course, and Bosh. But if you got a guy who's very streaky, it tilts the series. Shane Battier, for all intents and purposes, actually probably won that series in Miami, if you really think about it.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure if scared of him is the right word, but
he scares me. I'm not. And I've had this, and this is the thing. This is not a new position. I'm revealing to you right now.
Right.
I've had the same position since he was in Denver. Even in 2012, when he was in New York, when he won Sixth Man of the Year, I said this when I was defending the Knicks about could this Knicks team who won 54 games that year, could they go deep in the playoffs? I said they could. Carmelo will get his, obviously, but if JR shoot lights out, that could be a series. That was my point. J.R. Smith is a guy who, look at last night. The Hawks probably win that game last night if J.R. doesn't make 2 points in that game.
Sure.
You get what I'm saying? That's what I mean. I don't mean that he's better than LeBron or that. Because LeBron's going to get his amount of you slice it. It's just that the other guys.
Right. I think you know, he's clearly the biggest X factor because he can shoot you in or out of games. And I think that's been the knock on him throughout his whole career, is that you never know. I mean, he might have totaled his number of made three-pointers last night. He hit 8. He might not hit another 8 for the rest of the series, however long it goes. You never know with JR, and that's the whole thing. And clearly, you have to be concerned about a guy like that if you're Atlanta. Maybe you shut him down now in game 2. If DeMar Carroll is not hurt, you know, does that leave guys like LeBron to score more? Or maybe Kyrie Irving, who wasn't necessarily as much of a factor in game 1. It's an interesting situation here. But what I'm blown away is that you actually just said that you defended the Knicks in something. I can't believe that. As a Heat lifer? I mean, what's going on there?
Look. You know my position on the Knicks, okay? What I was saying 2012 was the, you know, we're also working the media. We're bringing analysis to the game. I can't just say, I hate the Knicks. oh, I'm doing radio, but I hate the Knicks. No, I can't do that. I mean, that's not real analysis. You know, people listen to my show to hear, you know, truth and unbiased commentary. I'm going to give you that. Now, I can still throw in, oh, the Knicks are pretty good and it can be scary, but I hate you. I can do all that now. But, you know, the thing was, like I said, J.R. Smith is that guy. That he's a guy that can go 0-for-12 one night and then do what he did last night. That's my point.
I agree 100%.
And that's what I meant, Kane Tony, my boy, at Kane Tony on Twitter. Shout out to you, man. I hope that cleared it up. I really hope that cleared it up, man. I wasn't saying LeBron's the best player in the world. He's going to do he's going to do LeBron things always. So, and we got good news on DeMar Carroll. DeMar Carroll is going to be owing day to day. I think he misses game two, but he'll play game three. This is my opinion. But it kind of feels like last night that Atlanta blew his best chance to win the series.
Yeah.
To me, now, anyway.
We should bring it back to Miami Heat Earth for a little bit, you know, and I want to point out that DeMar Carroll is a name that's been tossed about as a possible replacement for Luol Deng should he opt out. So that's something for Heat fans to look out for. I don't see it happening. I think he's been clearly Atlanta's best player during the playoffs, so I don't know. He might have priced himself out of whatever options Miami has, but at the same time, he's a good fit for what Miami does.
You mentioned in that same article, the Deng article, that's a guy you may want to look at. He might be expensive, but if Deng opts out, and if you crunch some numbers, do you say Dwayne Wade opts out, it takes less money? DeMar Carroll's a guy I want on my team. DeMar Carroll will be a starter. He's a younger Deng. He'll be a guy that could do the things Deng used to do in Chicago.
Sure.
But has more tread on those tires.
Yeah.
I mean, that's not another option for Miami. I'm not saying it's gonna happen. I'm just throwing scenarios out there, guys. So don't. I'm not going into the trade machine and doing this. That's not happening. So, but that's a guy I would love on Miami. DeMar Carroll, those guys like that. I like those kind of like glue guys. So yeah. And I think we agree. Golden State is a smoke. I have Golden State in 5 games in Houston.
No word on Howard, right? I mean,
I don't think it matters. I don't think it matters. They can be full strength. Golden State in 5.
It doesn't matter. Houston has just defied everything that I thought about them earlier in the season. I remember going back to last summer when you heard talk about Dwight Howard and James Harden kind of alienating themselves from the rest of the team, you know, talk about them having lunch by themselves and not necessarily meshing with the other lower level role players on the team. And I thought that they were going to just fall apart. They lose Chandler Parsons, and then you think to yourself, they lose out on Chris Bosh, obviously, as well. And you think to yourself, man, this is a team that's not necessarily going to be able to do anything. Instead, they wind up securing the second seed in the goddamn Western Conference. I have no idea what I'm talking about. I think clearly that is illustrated by my thoughts on Houston, because that just blew me away how much success that they had this season. But I'm not going to count them out. I'll tell you that much. I don't know. They could win the next 4 games, right? It would be extremely unexpected, considering. I don't think so either. I think it's going to be a Golden State championship for the first time since 77, 76, 78. I can't remember now what year Golden State won it.
I think they won it. 77.
Okay. But I think Golden State's going to win over Cleveland in the finals. That's for sure.
First off, and no disrespect to the Clippers. The Warriors aren't the Clippers. They're not going to allow a 3-1 comeback. That's not going to happen. The Warriors don't do that kind of stuff. Number one. And I think game one showed you how good this team is. They're down 18 in the second quarter. And at the half, they're up 2.
Yeah, but you could make that same argument. You can make that same argument that Houston was pretty good, considering the fact that they lost their second, arguably their second best player. I mean, they've got James Harden good role players there. I mean, even Patrick Beverley, who's another great point guard, another very solid role player there. He's hurt. He's done for the year. I mean,
Don't get me wrong. I think this series will be competitive game to game. Game to game will be competitive. How about the 2012 finals against OKC? Other than game five, every game came out to the final possession, Miami, OKC. Miami won 5 games. So you look at the entire of the series, you think, oh, Miami blew them out. No. Other than game five, where Mike Miller went absolutely bonkers, that series was close. I think it'll be the same thing with Houston and Golden State. I think it'll be competitive, but they got too many horses, dude. When David Lee's in ninth option, David Lee's in ninth option.
Yeah, it's kind of unbelievable.
Yeah. Like I said, if they tie out Draymond Green to a long-term deal this summer, they may be what OKC should have been for the last couple of years. Seriously, I know it's not a shot at you. I know you're right from OKC side, but I didn't want to shot at you like that.
Yeah, no. I mean, it's interesting though, because I mean, now I've got I'm double booked as far as watching the draft is concerned. You know, trying to see what happens at 14 for Oklahoma City and at 10 for Miami. But you know, it's an interesting thing. It's a new challenge for me, but I'm actually enjoying.
More important, buddy. Sorry.
Well, you know, the thing is, you know, you look at it's such a weird, you know, dynamic as far as, like, for me, you know, my allegiance to Miami, but the things that I'm able to witness from Oklahoma City, the strategy of Sam Presti, all the things that they've done. I mean, you look at what they did last year when they drafted Josh Huestis. You know, I don't know if you remember the situation there, but basically they took a guy in the first round, and because of the rules in place, they would have had to, like, offer him a full-time contract where he would have had a guaranteed 2 years at, you know, several million dollars, you know, a standard rookie deal. If he had been taken in the second round, he wasn't guaranteed anything. And this was a guy who might not have been drafted at all. So basically what they were able to do was use their first round pick. They didn't want to add any more salary to their existing roster, and they basically made an agreement, kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and said, look, why don't you play out this rookie year on the D-League, and you'll only make $25,000 as opposed to what you could as a first-round pick. But the reality was that he wasn't going to make that money anyway, and so he agreed to it. He was basically a draft and stash pick. I mean, unbelievable the way that they work there. I've learned so much about a different, you know, completely different franchise. They always have this plan. It's bordering on, you know, secretive, maybe even paranoid at some points. And it's a big contrast in styles between what I'm so used to in Miami.
I'm going to put it on blast real quick because you said on my podcast a couple weeks ago, you think Kevin Durant's done in OKC. Or you think they're preparing for that?
I mean, they have to. I mean, they're all in at this point, but they've kind of set themselves up so if he leaves, which is a very likely possibility, you know, and that's the whole thing too. I have a very unique perspective because of our, you know, experience last year following Miami, covering the team,
He's the only other outlier in the league is Kevin Durant.
Right. I mean, you look at what LeBron was doing as far as this unprecedented run of four straight trips to the finals and, you know, his ability to kind of carve his niche out as a historical great, his friendship with guys like Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade, and you figure, oh, there's no way this guy leaves, right? I mean, he's going to be here for the rest of his career. Or maybe, as you and I have talked about on a number of occasions, he goes there towards the end of his career, plays one last year in Cleveland, kind of to, you know, sum up everything, put a nice bow on a Hall of Fame career. Instead, he just leaves in the middle of things. But, you know, now all of a sudden, and, you know, anybody from OKC who might be listening, I'm sure they're going to get pissed off. They are desperate. They cannot envision a future without Kevin Durant. It's very, very interesting. But this is a guy, you know, you got rid of Scott Brooks. You've traded away a good friend, James Harden. You've made some moves here and there. I don't think the conflict, you know, the alleged conflict, I should say, between Russell Westbrook and Durant is completely fabricated. I don't think that there's anything much to it. I think they're very friendly off the court. But it's not enough to keep you there. We saw that. I mean, you know, you got a guy like LeBron and Dwayne Wade. They're best like friend. Brothers. Best I mean, friends. They've been, yeah. Yes. They were part of each other's wedding parties. I mean, this is ridiculous. You know, you don't get that kind of level of friendship, you know. But then it's, you know, as they say all too frequently, basketball is a business, even though we see it as a game, and they're going to make the right business decision. Kevin Durant can't spend the rest of his career in Oklahoma City knowing that Westbrook's going to get a lot of money as a free agent, knowing that Serge Ibaka is going to get a lot of money as a free agent, and that might put a lot of pressure. Look, Enes Kanter is another name that they're looking to re-sign long-term. You know, Presti's a very smart guy, and he's, you know, clearly got a long-term master plan in place. But I don't see Kevin Durant necessarily fitting along those plans. And he's going to do whatever he wants to. And for him, it's all about, you know, like we heard from LeBron.
Look at you, stirring the pot. I like it. And that's enough from saying hot, hot thunder.
Sorry about that.
Nah. Before we get going, anything in the plug? Anything you want to, any last thoughts on today's podcast? By the way, I like to hopefully do more of these podcasts. I know people were asking about this. We've been kind of like this year slack on the podcast, and we will definitely try to do much we can. Definitely we'll do something. We'll try to do more pods, definitely, as we hear more transactions with the Luol Deng and Dragic, and of course the draft. But I do promise that going to next season, we will definitely up the podcast a little more. We got some good plans and some good opportunities coming up soon. So
that's good. I hope I can be a part of them.
Well, why would you even ask that? You've been every single one.
That's right.
I can't even say that. I just won. You know what I'm
saying? No, yeah, you have.
So, anything else to plug before we get going?
Nah, I think, you can follow me at DeverMill13 if you really want to. Sometimes I write about basketball, sometimes it's pretty good, so hopefully you'll follow me on Twitter and you can see what I write for. I write for a number of sites from just Hot Hot Hoops, but, I know where my bread is buttered. I know where I like writing about most.
Bucket list. And by the way, Dave is a great writer, not just on Miami Heat, but he writes a lot of great basketball perspective columns. Trust me, you want to follow him. He's a great follow. Follow me on Twitter, of course, at EastChris7. My podcast, of course, First Week Podcast, on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and GSCSports.com. And of course, here at Hot Hoops, the home team here. Go Heat. So.
Can you feel the heat down in your soul?
I feel the heat down in my soul.
Can you see the heat there in control?
I see the heat there in control.
Can you feel it?
I feel it.
Can you see it?
I see it.
It's Miami.
We can't be beat. It's Miami.
It's